Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania.
Keystone of democracy.
I love your family and dear. I always will. You're the one great state that I am always for.
Today we present another in the statewide series of programs, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy. Historical dramatizations showing the part our own state of Pennsylvania plays in the life and success of these 48 United States. This series is prepared and produced by the Pennsylvania Historical Commission in cooperation with the State Council of Defense in order to acquaint you better with the glorious history of our great Commonwealth, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, and no matter where I roam, you will always be home, sweet home to me, Pennsylvania, my home.
This country is not free. America cannot be called a democracy while half her citizens cannot vote. How long must we wait for justice?
America is not free. For almost a century, these words rang forth the challenge of the women of America to their government. From the earliest days of our country until two short decades ago, women fought valiantly for their ideal of democracy. It is easy for us now to forget the opposition met by the earliest fighters for the cause of women, the indifference they faced, the hardships they endured. It is hard for us, secure in the reforms they accomplished, to imagine that every day in this stronghold of freedom were enacted such scenes as this.
What are you doing with Johnny's clothes? Why are you wrapping them up?
John is going away tomorrow to Philadelphia.
Going away? I don't know what you mean. I don't want him to go away.
You have nothing to say about it. John is 8 years old now, and it's time he earned some money.
But Philadelphia...
My brother just wrote that he can put him to work in the factory there. I'm sending him tomorrow.
In the factory? Oh, no, you can't do that. He's so young. Only 8. Kill him.
John is as strong as other boys. Stronger than some I've seen in the factories with their pale, skinny faces. He'll be all right.
But I don't want him to leave me. My baby. I won't let him go.
What can you do? He's my son. I'm his father. His owner. And I must say that he go.
Oh, my poor baby. My poor Johnny. I don't want him to go.
It was injustice like this against which the earliest crusaders for women's rights began to fight over 100 years ago. Women like Lucretia Mott, the gentle Quakeress of Philadelphia, asked only for justice, for equality in the eyes of the law. But in those days, in the opinion of the best legal minds, a woman had no rights, no identity apart from those of her husband.
Can you do something to help me? You're a lawyer, and you must know what I can do.
You say that your husband is going to sell this property of yours to his brother for $1? Why, that's giving it away.
Yes, I know. That's why I must stop it.
And you say the property is yours?
It's mine. My father left it to me before I was married.
But you know that once you are married, you no longer had separate legal ownership of your property.
But surely I have something to say about its disposal.
I'm afraid not. Justice Blackstone has interpreted the common law in this way. A man and his wife are one person, and that one person is the husband.
Justice? Do you call that justice?
We want equality of rights.
Justice. We demand justice.
Women must be placed on an equal basis with men.
Inevitably, as it must be in a democracy, their voices were heard. But not without a long, bitter fight did these women see their hopes realized. Pennsylvania was one of the first states to grant property rights to women. But equal rights in property were not enough, they soon found. Women must also seek the right to education and to the work for which they were suited. But with each step forward, they met with new opposition. Opposition like that of the speaker whom 17-year-old Anna E. Dickinson heard one night in Philadelphia.
Woman reigns like a queen in her own household. Indirectly, through their husbands and their sons, women exert their beneficent influence upon the whole world. But let us keep that influence innocent and pure. Women must not, nay, they cannot enter business or the professions because they are unable to be anything but what they are, housekeepers.
Anna, what are you doing?
You, sir, say that what your daughters cannot be, no man's daughters can be.
Anna Dickinson, sit down.
You say your daughters are incapable of being doctors, lawyers, or businessmen. In a word, sir, that your daughters are fools. In heaven's name, what else is to be expected of such a father?
That was the first appearance before a public audience of Anna E. Dickinson, who was to win nationwide fame as a speaker in defense of women's rights. Under Pennsylvania women leaders like Miss Dickinson, Rachel Foster Avery, Ann Preston, and Jane Swisshelm, the battle went on, and soon the whole issue crystallized in the question of suffrage for women. If women could vote, they reasoned, they would not have to beg for justice.
We proclaim that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed, and that taxation without representation is tyranny. But is this true in America? How can it be, when one half of the people are disfranchised for no other reason than sex?
Across the country they went, from the staid lecture halls of New England to the rough mining camps of the West, carrying their message of emancipation. In Pittsburgh.
No objections are raised when women leave their homes to scrub floors. Yet when women ask the right to be doctors, men say the work is too hard for women, not dignified. But what dignity is there in scrubbing floors?
In New Orleans.
You say that woman's place is in the home, protecting her children. But we say that woman must have the power to protect her home and her children against unjust law.
In San Francisco.
Don't tell us that men are naturally chivalrous and will protect us. Give us the vote and we will protect ourselves. We don't want chivalry. We want justice.
Arguing, pleading, commanding, the speakers went on. They had a foretaste of victory in 1869 when Wyoming entered the Union with school suffrage in its constitution. Then followed Colorado, Utah, and Idaho, Washington, California, Kansas. But speaking was not the only weapon they used. Oh, no. They knew the way to a man's heart.
Well, Harriet, I must say I can't see where this modern world is going. Women in the restaurant business. You know, my dear, I didn't really want to come to the silly suffragette restaurant with you.
Now, George.
But really, Harriet, I disapprove of the whole business. You know that. But I must admit the meal was superb. Excellent. Still can't see how you women do it.
Stubborn to the end, aren't you? But I do believe you're finally becoming convinced.
Well, you women are really a determined lot.
You see, George, this restaurant is one of the ways in which we women here in Scranton and Lackawanna County raise money and gain support for our worthy cause of suffrage.
I'm becoming quite aware of that by now.
And you must see that we're gaining some headway.
Yes, you seem to be making beautiful progress.
We women in America, particularly here in Pennsylvania, are striving to secure for our sex their rightful place as citizens with the right to vote. You know, dear, some of the Western states have already granted women that franchise.
Yes, you've told me that before, but you aren't going to make another one of your speeches, are you?
No, I'm afraid you've heard enough of them. And you must admit that my housework hasn't been neglected because of them.
Yes, you have me there, but that's just the point. How long would we men get good food like this if all the women neglected their duties to work in public and even become politicians?
Well, this meal was cooked by a visitor to Scranton. She's from the state of Wyoming, and she's been voting for a long time. And you can't say her cooking has suffered from it.
No, I can't say that I can, but still...
Oh, come now, George. You will support women's suffrage at the next election, won't you?
All right, my dear, you win. I guess there's no other way out for us poor men.
Under the leadership of Alice Paul, a graduate of Swarthmore and the University of Pennsylvania, the National Woman's Party began a determined siege in Washington in 1912. After 7 years of lobbying in Congress and picketing the White House, they finally saw their hopes fulfilled when in June of 1919, the suffrage amendment was passed in Congress and quickly ratified by states which already had woman suffrage. Then came a momentous day.
The hall of the assembly here at Harrisburg are crowded today with men and women who have come to hear the vote on the proposed 19th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Most of the women present are wearing the National Women's Party colors, and the floor from here seems to be a waving mass of purple, white, and gold. Today's vote is most important, because if the amendment is passed, Pennsylvania will become the first non-suffrage state to have ratified the 19th Amendment, a circumstance which will influence a favorable vote in other non-suffrage states. Governor Sproul has declared himself in favor of the amendment, and even Senator Penrose has finally agreed to give it his support. Mrs. Lawrence Lewis and Miss Mary Ingham have done much to forward its passage. On the floor of the Senate, a strong supporter for the amendment is speaking.
Let us delay no longer the inevitable extension of the franchise to those citizens of our great democracy who have been voteless so long. We have had enough of reasoned arguments for and against the suffrage amendment. We have had enough of emotional arguments, even of hysterical arguments. It must by now be apparent to all that if our government is to be truly representative, it must reflect the wishes of all its citizens, and not just the half of them who happen to be men. These women say they sent their sons abroad to die for democracy, and now they ask democracy at home. Their claim is just. Let us deal with it justly. Mr. President, I move that the amendment be put to a vote without further delay.
On June 24, 1919, Pennsylvania became the first non-suffrage state to ratify the 19th Amendment. In August 1920, the amendment became law, and today, firmly embedded in the Constitution of the United States, it stands a symbol of the freedom women have won in democracy.
The rights of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex.
The women of Pennsylvania, the colonists and pioneers, abolitionists and suffragists, wives and mothers and daughters of heroes, fought long and suffered much for freedom. They will not easily surrender what they have won.
In each new crisis of our democracy, women have played a role of tremendous importance.
Under totalitarian rule, woman is regarded as a creature without a soul, a being with no rights and only one duty, to give soldiers to her country.
The women of Pennsylvania today reject this philosophy and are rising heroically to the defense of the American way of life. Today, Pennsylvania women are aiding in the work of civilian defense, as well as serving the country in industry, the office, and virtually every phase of our national effort. Now, as in the past, the women of Pennsylvania are showing the spirit which made Pennsylvania the keystone of democracy.
Pennsylvania, you're the land that I adore. I love your valleys and hills, I always will. You're the one great state that I am always for.
This program was presented by the Pennsylvania Historical Commission in cooperation with the State Council of Defense. Do your part to win victory for democracy. Conserve, don't hoard necessary war materials. Take your place in civilian defense by joining a citizen's defense training class. Knit and sew for the Red Cross. Study first aid and home nursing. Buy defense bonds and stamps. Live and act for victory. And listen next week to another program in this series, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, and no matter